Who does number two work for?
Coming to you from somewhere deep inside Transition Studios, brought to you by your hosts, Roger and Leto. Welcome to Sci-Fi Rewind!
Oh hell, let's just do what we always do, hijack some nuclear weapons and hold the world hostage.
Hello, everyone. I'm Roger.
And I'm Leto.
And together we are
Sci-Fi Rewind.
Are you not going to do your bling thing?
Oh, I thought you didn't like it.
Oh, no, I'm not against it. I'm just never going to add in a sound effect.
Ring!
Yeah, there we go.
Because I think we're like gearing up our superpowers, but I don't think you're on board with that.
Oh, no. I am just the straight man until I'm not the straight man.
Wait, so I'm the...
Who knows what we are?
Or the Costello.
Yeah, we're the Free Stooges, except we're missing a third stooge.
Who do we have in the studio today?
It was quiet for a long portion of the day, but a good portion of the studio just came back from a shoot, right?
Right.
But I wanted to start this off. Okay, everyone, you know the rules. But today we're talking about Austin Power.
Austin Danger Powers.
Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. And I just want to say, I could not believe the like perfect timing, because around the time this was being recorded, the Amber Heard, Johnny Depp trial was going on.
Yes.
And Leto, I don't know if you know this.
I don't.
I'm going to show him this picture.
Oh, no way. Are you serious?
Yes.
She's wearing the same clothes as Dr. Evil.
Yes, I was like, I could not believe, like, I randomly picked Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, and suddenly Amber Heard shows up to court dressed like Dr. Evil.
Wow. Is she doing that on purpose, you think?
Probably not. She probably didn't realize.
Oh, no.
But I really just hope, like, next time she shows up to court.
Dude, that is a monkey trial, if we've ever seen one.
I really hope next time she appears in court, the Dr. Evil theme starts to play. I feel like Dr. Evil isn't even comparable to Amber Heard in terms of how evil someone could be.
Dr. Evil is...
Dr. Evil makes... Amber Heard makes Dr. Evil look like a saint.
Exactly. She is something... I mean, it's... you know, like, usually these things, you're like, oh, man, what did Johnny Depp do to the female? And I've never seen it the other way around.
This and the Will Smith Jada Pinkett thing is just like, Jesus, there's some like manipulation going on there.
Wow. Is this the beginning of like a male Me Too movement?
Hopefully an awakening of women can just be as abusive as men can be.
Right.
It's just like, wake up. There needs to be understanding that everyone can be an a-hole.
Right.
Everyone can be monstrous. It's not just specific to one gender or one race or anything. Everyone is full of it. And you need to keep an open mind in these situations. You need to be like prepared for both sides of the story.
There's always two sides to the story. Very good point. I have to agree 100% in all seriousness. Good point.
Yes.
Even, you know, when two armies are battling each other, there's always two sides. And usually the one side is going to be telling its own side that their side is right.
History is written by the victor.
Exactly.
And speaking of two sides to the story, you know, Austin Powers.
Right.
I'd say the two primary characters, the two main characters are Dr. Evil and Austin Powers.
Exactly, and there are two sides of the coin. You got the ultimate good guy, and then the ultimate evil guy.
Well, I just want to get into it.
Let's go.
So I'm just going to do my quick elevator pitch.
Let's do it. Pitch it, and then we'll move forward.
Imagine Airplane, but spy movies.
Like a slapstick?
More like awkward. It could be all types of humor, but there's just so much. It's making fun of the spy genre as a whole.
I love it. I think we need a little serious, little spoof on some seriousness.
There's a little bit of seriousness in the film, but it's mainly just like jovial, feel you'll get from the movie. It's not gonna get too serious or anything.
So it's a fun ride.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a spy movie first, or is it a sci-fi movie first? Because we predominantly work with sci-fi.
There's science fiction elements to it. I mean,
okay.
There's like the cryogenic freezing. There's launching a nuke into the core of Earth.
I've seen that before.
And there's fembots, robots that have sex with people.
Which, okay.
Quite honestly, given our current environment, that's a possibility.
That's
these
like
days.
Real science now. Yep.
Yeah, that's becoming real science. Is there anything else you want to hear about? Or
yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm always concerned about the budget. Well, I'm a numbers man. I'm a numbers cruncher.
Well,
and I kind of want to get an idea of. I mean, so this is a spy movie. Is it going to take place in today's time or like in the past?
Well, it will be set in the '60s.
Uh-huh.
And then our main hero and our main antagonist cryogenically freeze themselves to go. Main antagonist freezes himself to go to a time where I guess he could flourish better in modern day society. I don't quite understand what Dr. Evil's plan was. but he escapes to the future, maybe to escape from Austin Powers, but who knows? And Austin Powers cryogenically freezes himself. They freeze himself in the '60s, and now they're in 1997. And so it's people from a different era waking up and getting accustomed to a new era.
Fish out of water story.
Yes, yes, yes. And the budget, we're talking about that right there.
Yeah.
In 1997, it's $16.5 million.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty manageable in $97.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think this movie could do well at the box office. Spoiler alert, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a spy movie with sci-fi elements.
Mm-hmm.
What's the main genre?
Comedy.
And then what are the two movies it's like?
I think the biggest one I can recommend, I'd say, is like James Bond, like okay. Sean Connery kind of stuff. And Airplane.
Perfect. Great stuff.
I mean, I know there's Top Secret, which exists.
Yeah.
But that's like World War II, Elvis movies. There's quite a bit that movie is dealing with. I feel like this, to its core, is just a flat out straight parody of spy movies.
Okay.
It's written by and starring Mike Myers.
Well, that's gonna keep things the cost down. We only gotta.
Yeah.
If he's writing it, is he directing?
He is not. It is okay. Is directed by Jay Roach.
Jay Roach.
Who directed Meet the Parents.
Oh, good stuff.
Dinner for Schmucks.
Yeah, good comedy director.
Okay, he did The Campaign, which is the movie where
Will Ferrell
punches
and
a baby.
And Zach Galifianakis?
Mm-hmm.
That was a great one.
He directed Trumbo. That is the most shocking thing.
Trumbo?
Yeah, the movie where it's like Dalton Trumbo.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Starring Bryan Cranston.
Oh, okay.
Trumbo was a notorious screenwriter.
Oh.
But he was also a communist back in the '60s and everything.
What did he write? What movie did he write?
Spartacus.
Oh.
He wrote a lot. He also directed one of my favorite horror movies. Johnny Got His Gun.
Oh, okay. That's one of you always talk about that one.
Yeah, I describe that as one of the scariest movies I've ever seen, even though it's not technically a horror movie. And Bombshell. I don't know about Bombshell.
Well, let's see if we can get him out of steel. Let's do it.
Yeah. And Demi Moore produced this movie. That is
really
the most shocking thing to me.
I think when I saw the credits, I'm like, what? Seriously?
Demi Moore.
She got into the producing world. Well, I tell you what, she picked a winner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. And then basic story is They go into the future to fight each other, the good versus evil.
And the culture shock of, like, going from the 60s to the 90s.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, and it's just, like, completely, like, jarring, like, taking a it's like taking a character from a movie, from, like, a comedy, and putting him into, like, a more serious, like, drama film. And you go, like, these don't belong to each other, but he's here now.
So, reverse Back to the Future. We're going...
somewhat.
Into the future.
Yes.
Cool.
We can even deal with time travel in the sequels. In one of the sequels, maybe.
Well, if this movie does well, of course. Let's just keep pumping these things out. Talking franchise.
Yes.
Love it.
Okay, are we done?
We are done.
Okay.
What's your first impressions? Like, when did you first see this?
God. I saw this. This was a movie I watched a crap ton when I was a kid.
Okay.
It wasn't a movie, like, I sought out. It was just... it would always happen to be on TV, and I would always kind of watch it. And it's one of those films that I just kind of grew up with. But it's not until, like, recent viewings where I think I finally got the film.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because, like, I didn't know about... because, like, you know, I wasn't into the spy genre when I was growing up, and I'd like to take a moment to just talk about all the tropes or things I noticed.
Okay, good. Perfect.
Blofeld, James Bond villain.
Oh.
That's Dr. Evil. Button that drops people from chairs into trap, which is also in a movie featuring Blofeld, I believe. Basil Exposition, the guy who will, like, appear on a screen and go, like, here's the plot, here's what you need to do. That kind of happens in Mission Impossible. Heroes that have a lot of sexual partners.
Right.
Heroes had badass female sidekicks. I don't know particularly which one this has, but I don't know specifically that movie, but I know that that's something that probably happened. Guy who froze deadly clothing wear. There's one, like, James Bond villain who froze a hat that's, like, that has, like,
what was it? Odd Job?
Something.
Is that,
like,
the guy's name?
Something like it, but in this movie, it's
a shoe. Who throws a shoe, really?
That really hurt.
That really hurt.
But this guy is...
I think it's Odd Job. Yeah, he throws the hat.
Yeah, Odd Job.
He was in a James Bond film. Goldfinger.
Random Task. That's his name.
Random Task. Yeah. Oh, it's a play off his name.
Yeah.
Odd Job. Random Task.
Main bad guy would have insane plans to take over / hold the world hostage.
Right.
Villain had a secret family member that no one knew about. I'm not 100% certain about that, but I feel like that might be something.
I think that might have been something they wrote in.
But I feel like that is something where it's like, you killed my twin brother. Now I've come to take revenge.
Okay.
Maybe that's kind of
Die Hard had that. Mm-hmm. Not they weren't twin brothers, they were brothers, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I feel like I'm not 100% on that. I just throwing it out there.
Gotcha.
Pussy galore.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of vagina.
A lot of vagina, yep.
Evil characters were at characters where the villain... moments where the villain laughs evilly.
Right, and they did that.
Mm-hmm. Undressing scene for sexy times. Hero is given secret gadgets.
Yes.
Stealing disguises.
Yes.
Death trap for the hero.
Right.
And giant gunfight at the end.
Absolutely. And then there's the small guns with the British, with those little small pistols.
So this is my history and my impressions.
Mm-hmm.
I said it in our review of Galaxy Quest, and I'll say it here. This is a movie that is that has great characters, specifically in Dr. Evil.
Right.
Dr. Evil is one of those characters where it's like I completely get whenever I see Mike Myers come back and play him for, like, little skits, because it is such a fun character to play. I have so many quotes written down here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my... it's not even a funny line. I just laugh at it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my underground lair. And then there's a little bit later, like a few seconds later, he goes, like, they're talking about their failure to kill Austin Powers. And he goes, That makes me angry. And when Dr. Evil gets angry, Mr. Bigglesworth gets upset. Meow. And when Mr. Bigglesworth gets upset, people die! And then he's just, all these people, like someone falls into a trap and the guy starts laughing and then he goes into a trap. Why must I be surrounded by freaking idiots?
No, the whole movie's in my head. I can probably sit back and watch it.
Oh my God. The scene when the big boys finally landing on Earth.
Yeah.
Good God. He's back. And then Clint Howard goes like, well, in many ways, he never left, sir. He's talking about the big boy. Operate delicious meals at fair prices.
Fair prices. Quality meals. Yeah.
Oh God. I think I told you about this some time ago. I recently watched Austin Powers like a couple months back,
mm-hmm.
and I said I found the Austin parts not as fun. And I feel like I've, on this most recent viewing, I've grown to appreciate them more. Like when he wakes up and the Russian guy is there and he's going like, Russian intelligence, are you mad? Oh no, the war's over. Well, good riddance to those capitalist dogs, eh?
Hey, comrades.
And he's like, no, we won. Oh, yay, capitalism. He's just like such a turncoat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because, like, I'll speak on that later, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's so many, like, Dr. Evil is endlessly quotable.
Oh, my goodness.
Look at what you did to Mr. Bigglesworth. Look what you did to Mr. Bigglesworth. it just... So many good moments. When Frau Farbissina is introduced, Frau Farbissina, founder of the militant wing of the Salvation Army. And that's the thing. I was talking about cast of colorful villains.
Yeah.
And you get like the Irish guy. Every time he kills someone, he gets a new charm. And, you know, he goes like, they're always after me, Lucky Charms.
The television commercial.
Everyone's laughing.
Even Dr. Evil knows that. How is that? If he was cryogenically frozen.
Was Lucky Charms a thing in the 60s?
I don't know. 60s? We'll see. Lucky Charms. Because he was on board with that joke.
Mm-hmm. But
he didn't know who the Alan Parsons Project was.
Oh, hell, let's just do what we always do. Hijack some nuclear weapons and hold the world hostage. Yeah? Good. There's so many quotes. They refer to him as, the United Nations refer to him as Dr. Evil, as Mr. Evil. And he goes, Dr. Evil, I didn't spend 6 years in evil medical school to be called Mr. Thank you very much.
Okay, so Lucky Charms was introduced March 20th, 1964.
Okay.
So it does you know, it does work. It does pan out.
Oh, God, I have so many notes. It's hard to choose from, but this is one of those films where it's, you know, it's a spy movie. It's a parody, but it also excels in awkward humor. There's so many awkward scenes that just go on, like the blackjack scene.
Oh? Oh, when he's like... I'll stay. What is that? Like, I has a five or something?
Yes. number two has an X-ray eye patch to let him know. It's like, okay, I'll make a bet here. I'll get 21. And Austin Powers is so sure of himself. He's like, I have a five. I'll stay. And to prove a point, it's like, I also like to live dangerously.
Isn't there a Casino Royale type of Bond movie where they do poker?
I was thinking about that, but that came out later, but it could be based on the book.
Well, I think there was still a James Bond where he's like an original where he does the blackjack.
I want to imagine something like that.
Yeah.
That I'm not 100%. I'm familiar with the tropes. I'm not familiar with the movies. Oh, God. But there's, like I say, every scene with Dr. Evil is gold. I think the first scene where we're introduced to him is when we get to see a full face. That scene is just, like, perfect.
There is a Casino Royale in 67.
Okay.
With David Niven?
Okay.
As James Bond, and Peter Sellers is in it. How about that?
But that scene, because there's, like, three iconic moments. There's the moment where they kill Mustafa.
Yeah.
And he's very much alive but badly burnt. It goes on awkwardly.
I know. And they're just sitting there, and he has to pick up the phone. He's like, yes, he's burned. But no, can you go in there and shoot him? Oh, yeah, shoot him.
And then there's the scene where he has to, like, describe his insane evil plan. But the modern-day world is already insane, and it already happened.
Yeah, and that has just, already happened.
I need to...
In the ozone layer.
And then there's the scene where he talks about $1 million. Don't you think we should ask for more than $1 million? $1 million isn't exactly a lot these days. Virtucon alone makes $9 billion a year.
$9 billion, really?
That's a lot. That's a lot. We'll hold the world ransom for 100
billion.
And he has to, like, awkwardly look to number two, see if that's an okay number.
Number two's like, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, that's good. It's good. That's a good evil number. Oh, hey, Cleveland shout out.
Yeah, steel mill in Cleveland.
Yeah, steel mill.
And then isn't there a factory in Chicago that makes miniature models of factories? Naturally.
I always say it's like this scene is the best scene, but then there's the
group therapy scene.
Rest in peace to Carrie Fisher.
Fisher.
She's so good. She's so good for the little amount she has.
Oh, my goodness.
The moment where it's like, I was talking to you sometime about this. It was like, I love how, you know, she's like, oh, he doesn't really want to kill you. And after a while, like after Scott has been like going, this is what my dad is trying to kill me. He doesn't want to listen. And then Dr. Evil goes on that whole monologue talking about his childhood. And then.
And his dad.
Yeah, about his dad and shaved scrotums and all that. Sheeran scrotums. And Scott looks over to Carrie Fisher and he's like, he has like a, do you see what I mean? And she has like a look of like, yeah. It's like, yeah, now I get it.
My favorite line is like he invented the question mark.
And then to add to the awkward humor, after he's done with his speech, Carrie Fisher goes, you know, we have to stop. And then it awkwardly ends.
They know how to freaking deliver in this film, man. All over the place. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm talking over your stuff.
Oh, no. There's so much to describe. But one more joke I just really appreciate is, I don't know if it's intentional or not, the sharks with freaking laser beams. Can you explain to me what a laser beam is, Leto? Just, you don't need to look it up. Just describe to me.
It's like, you know, like a intense hot light that's, you know, that should burn something on contact.
Yes. I, from the way they describe it, it sounds like it's the actual beam, not the, like, weapon. So it sounds, from when he says, you'll notice that all the sharks have laser beams attached to their heads. It's not like he has a weapon. He describes it as if they have the actual beam on their back. And it's just like, that doesn't work.
I think he just wants like a super weapon type thing as a evil villain.
A laser ray would be more appropriate. But he describes it as if it's the beam itself.
Gotcha. But I think beam sounds cooler, though, than ray.
It sounds cooler, but it's like it doesn't quite work.
Right.
But I just love how also Dr. Evil is just a pet owner. All the scenes where he talks about his cat.
Isn't there a James Bond villain with a cat?
Yeah, that's Blofeld.
Oh, okay, cool.
Because he's a flat-out parody of Blofeld, but he's probably well more... The funny thing is, Dr. Evil is probably well more known these days than Blofeld.
Yep. Absolutely.
Dan, I want chicken. I want liver. Meow mix, please deliver. it's just like all these scenes where it's just like the original spy movies probably didn't tackle this, but in reality, this is probably what Blofeld might have been doing when no one was looking.
Right.
But I'll let you talk now, Leto. There's so much to say, but.
Okay, so Austin Danger Powers. Danger is my middle name. I said that already.
Yes.
But I graduated high school in 96.
Yes.
So I was 18, you know, ish then. And then so, like, what do? You're too young to go drinking. Still 21. So you just go to the movies, right? Mm-hmm. You go to the movies, you hang out at the mall, play video games, arcade games, right?
Right.
Can't do nothing. Nothing fun. occasional concert, but you get the X's on your hands. You can't do nothing.
Right.
So this movie came out a year after I graduated high school. There's no internet. You know, if it is, like, it's...
The spread of word isn't as big as it is today.
Right. And if there is an internet, it's like AOL, maybe, and, like, dial-up stuff, you know what I mean, with the modem.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing, like, crazy like it is now. Anyways, so this movie comes out. We go see it. I mean, there's a couple of little things on MTV that you kind of know about. It's comedy. Mike Myers, which we love from Wayne's World. And we're, you know, anything, you know, an SNL.
Mm-hmm.
So we're down. We're in. As soon as, like, we're sold as kids. We watch it, and it becomes our, like, instant favorite movie of for the next 10, 15 years, and we love it. And, I you know what I mean? I love this film. It's a great pick. You said Austin Powers, and I'm like, Sci-Fi Rewind? Austin Powers? Okay.
But
I'm down.
But this... And the later films definitely go into more sci-fi territory with time travel and all that. But I feel like this has enough sci-fi stuff in it.
Yeah.
Like Austin having to deal with the fact that he's no longer in the 60s and he's in a completely different era.
Right.
Like that is like analyzing. It's just like it is actually kind of a sad existence he's in at this point.
And it's not an unheard of thing because we got Back to the Future and other movies that kind of deal with the same thing. Time Cop and... you know, Demolition Man, whatnot.
I mean, especially in this film, though, there's like, without the sequel in mind, he has no way of getting back. He's just
frozen one way. He can only go one way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Demolition Man also has that premise, but it's just like, here it's just like, there's that scene where, you know, he talks about how it's like, oh, I had sex with a lot of vagina. And Vanessa goes like, you what? You need to realize, like, things have changed. You can't just go having multiple sex partners and all that. And he's like, he has to go like, man, everything I knew is just completely changed.
Yeah, it does get a little serious there.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, it is kind of...
when he gets a little bummed out when he's got to wear a condom.
And when he also gets bummed out when he finds out that Liberace was gay.
Yeah.
Who saw that coming?
The women love him. And all his friends... Or dead, mm-hmm. You know, it's all sad. But
His old partner has become old. I mean, she just has a little makeup on.
Yeah. Does that mean
her hair look a little gray?
Mrs. Kensington. So I can't believe we went this far, and you just touched on her, Elizabeth Hurley.
Mm-hmm.
When she came out, like, and that's another thing you haven't talked about is James Bond movies have, well, I think you did real quick, like the leading lady. That love interest is like the it girl of the time.
They have multiple partners.
Yeah, right. They have multiple partners, but there's usually like this one, you know, femme fatale-ish type.
Or a sidekick.
Sidekick that kind of like partners up with James, and that's the flavor of the day. But that person's usually like the America's, you know, newest like model, like actress. But Elizabeth Hurley... she came out of nowhere, dude. Like, mm-hmm. And then she got this role, and I'm telling you, I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, oh my gosh, did I have like a huge crush on Elizabeth Hurley? And mm-hmm. I think I still do.
Yeah.
She is like gorgeous to the max, and like they couldn't have picked a better. I looked her up on IMDb. I'm sorry. And then this is like her top movie that she's known for. I know she hasn't really done much after. Like she's done this, mm-hmm. and she's done that one with Brendan Fraser, where she plays the devil, and then it's just like, I don't know, like stuff that's really not as like, well known.
Yeah.
But did she freaking nail this part?
Yeah, she's really good in it.
Yeah.
I was always upset with
Me
the
too.
Later films
Me
that
too.
They just got rid of her.
Yeah.
And it's not even like they killed her off screen.
No, they did.
They had her return for the beginning of two, and then immediately say it's like, oh, she was a fembot.
She was a fembot, and it bums me out, dude.
Yeah.
Because it's like I was thinking about stuff that I would change for this film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna spoil it. I'm like, man, I would totally rewrite that she wasn't a fembot and she continued to be...
Well, this isn't a fault of this film. It's a fault of later films.
Yeah, like I think she would have been amazing just to continue to be a sidekick and not necessarily a love interest.
Because the whole thing about her and Austin is that it's like she's teaching him. It's right. Like, yeah, you need to. You can't be promiscuous. You need to be committed to one person.
Exactly. She's bringing him into our world.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like gorgeous, and she's like a good girl, and it's like that's like the man's.
She
dream.
And Austin have good chemistry.
Exactly.
I mean, Austin Powers is not good looking by any means.
I would have sex with you if you were the last man on earth.
Austin Powers is not good, but what he lacks in like physical attractiveness, he makes up for in just like this
charm.
Charm. This like, it's like. He's so charming that I could get why someone might want to go after him. I mean, even the mom goes like, he has this energy about him. It just makes people want to.
The mojo.
Yeah, the mojo.
Right. It's going to be hard to not talk about the other movies.
Yeah, but it's fair.
Because
like, I watched two recently. It's okay. It's still got some good moments. I haven't even bothered with Goldmember.
Yeah. Goldmember's fine. I think that dude cracks me up. Goldmember, actually, he's my fascia.
Fat bastard, though.
That's fat bastard.
He's that scene.
Get in my belly.
That scene when Heather Graham has to have sex with fat bastard. It is like those. It's counterbalance with just like beautiful Heather Graham against fat bastard.
I know.
It's just like the most disgusting thing.
So let me go back to my nostalgia here. Mm-hmm. So Austin Powers comes out, and I'm telling you, Roger, it was a huge hit. And people were dressing up like Austin, and people were talking. They were using the language, the verbiage. Do I make you horny? Oh, behave. I mean, it was everywhere. It was doing the pinky. It was so like...
The quotes on the poster.
It was everything. Everybody was like... It was a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Powers phenomenon. Like he nailed it out of the park. And then the movies, the second one just like increased them more and increased the fandom and everything. And I mean, and it got a little stale towards the end, like anything should, you know.
Right.
Okay, we've seen it. We laughed. And so everything, I mean, it just we love the film. I mean, we always love it and we always watch it. And I bought it so many times. And it is great.
If you ever want to just get the feel of Austin Powers but don't want to watch the film, just listen to that opening theme with Austin Powers. It perfectly like lets you know just the kind of vibe Austin Powers is.
That's what I got next. I was like thinking about it. Like the music's amazing in this film. It totally gets you in the mood.
Like instantly, Dr. Evil's theme is iconic. It's what I think kind of makes it work is that it's a legitimate song that you could probably use for a supervillain.
Well, I noticed something, and I'm wondering if this is the right person. Like, is it George Clinton that did the music? Is it the George Clinton from the P-Funk, Funkadelic? George Clinton?
George S. Clinton.
Or is that a different George Clinton? I don't know.
He did.
Is it the guy?
Cheech and Chong's Still Smoking. Cheech and Chong's.
Because I didn't know he did soundtracks or whatnot.
He did the Mortal Kombat soundtrack.
Okay.
Like the dun dun.
So is George S. Clinton the guy that was in the band, or is it a different George Clinton?
I'm not 100% certain. I'm not familiar with George Clinton, but.
Yeah, because he's like a funky. Like his music is like funky. George Clinton. And I don't know if George S. Clinton is the same. Person, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. I get what you're meaning. It's just kind of hard for me to kind of tell who's who.
Yeah, because you never know. People could have the same. Oh no, it's the different person. So it's not George Clinton. George S. Clinton is a different person than George Clinton. Okay, so I'm getting. So yeah.
Did you ever notice that at the end, number two was taking a fembot with him?
Yeah. Well, because you know, we had these things called real dolls coming out.
Yeah.
And that's almost like a fembot, but that just wasn't a robot.
The ones where it's like people are have a bunch of makeup on to make them look like dolls, or
no, like it's like a rubber doll, like it's a full female figure. So this is a nerd's movie, honestly. Mm-hmm. Because all these fantasies, you know, hanging out with beautiful women.
Especially when you're not good looking.
Yeah. Promiscuous sex, no strings attached. This is a guy's film. I mean, and then.
I mean, if I were to fart in a hot tub with a date, I feel like that date would just be done. But Austin Powers just like somehow just gets with a lot of vagina.
Doesn't she fart too?
I don't remember. I don't recall that happening. But okay. She says, like, how dare you break wind in my hot tub before me?
Yeah.
I go like, what?
Yep.
There's clearly something wrong with her.
So I too never really like consumed Bond films like you. So I didn't really get all the tropes, but like,
I mean, there's still probably more.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm looking a little too far into it, but that's just some of the stuff I noticed.
So I'm sure they're spoofing a lot of stuff, even like the dress and the henchmen and everything.
Because those trap chairs, those are like straight out of a Bond film.
Yeah, excellent. Gotcha.
People like fall from the chair and they just like are incinerated.
Right.
But I guess it's kind of like Zero Hour Airplane, where like I guess the filmmakers were like watching just all these movies and going like, all right, there's this scene. How about we have a joke? How about instead of these guys falling into the trap and then dying, what if they somehow survive? They're like, oh, God, please.
That's totally like...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's totally like someone sitting around and like thinking like...
Riffing.
Yeah, riffing, yeah. It's pretty good stuff.
I just like... I also like how Mustafa like fought someone would come to save him after he was like... tried to kill him.
Yeah.
It's just like, can someone please help me?
He's like, I designed this.
Did you notice how... Dr. Evil says this organization does not tolerate failure. And then immediately it's like he failed to kill Mustafa.
I'm badly burned. You know that was Will Ferrell, right?
I know.
Is that crazy? He was still like Saturday Night Live cast member, I think, point.
I mean, he probably.
So it was like a cameo, like a small one for him.
He probably brought a lot of SNL, like just talent over.
For sure, for sure. So, and when I first watched this movie, the first time I saw it in the movie theater,
yeah,
you know those little musical interludes that like come out of nowhere?
Yes.
Those cracked me up. They cracked me up. Like I was dying when I saw that. And then his face and
the
his
scene
smile.
Where he like puts his arms out and there's like arms that come out right behind him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's
or it's like he stops and it's like his mouth open, his teeth showing. Mm-hmm. All that stuff got me, dude. I was dying with this film. I was like. My sides were splitting. It was so funny.
Yeah, but there was also like really good choreography with all those nude scenes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I often wonder is like, did Mike Myers really get naked, or is he wearing like some kind of like suit to kind of hide his junk? Because it got really low at certain points.
Yeah, yeah, I know. He's just having fun, I guess, with the camera angles, and that's a good stuff. Like, I don't know. That's just back to good old filmmaking and I don't know, like knowing how to block a scene that like that, and I don't know, some good old silent films and Buster Keaton stuff.
I think I wrote like, can you imagine a PG-13 movie with this kind of dialogue? Just some of the stuff they say in this film. I never forget a pussy cat. it's just so childish. But I'm just thinking about PG-13 films these days, and they would probably go like. They probably wouldn't be as clever or something, or just as childish. They'd probably go like, we'll try and be more relatable dialogue. We'll just kind of make it seem like, oh, we're hip with the kids.
Right.
Do you know the visual
gags and dialogue were right on and spot on, and I loved it.
I want to ask you this. Which movie has the best looking Dr. Evil? Because they always, Dr. Evil always looks different with each film.
Okay.
Which Dr. Evil would you say is your?
I never really thought there was a difference.
I noticed it. There's something off with each other film. It's like they tried to make the prosthetics look good. I mean, we can maybe look at it later, but it's just like every single film, every single time he kind of shows up, he always looks a little different. And I think here is where he looks at. Looks his best. Maybe it's just because I'm so kind of used to how he looks here. You kind of look at.
He looks his best in this first movie.
Yeah, it's just kind of like how I feel.
Okay. All right. I'm just gonna keep going down my list here. When I was growing up, the pun names were like all over the place. There were the biggest thing. Like we didn't have the internet, right? So like people would have the pun names like IP Freely and, you know, other stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when Mike Myers just took it to another level with this film. So this was totally like just checking off our box in our adolescent humor. Mm-hmm. So we were like loving it when we got to see, you know, a lot of vagina and, you know, and then obviously later Fat Bastard and Goldmember and you know, and
Goldfinger, Goldmember.
Yeah.
That's clearly what they're making fun of there.
Right. With all the joke names and all the joke things and I mean all like the puns and everything.
I mean even then, just like Dr. Evil, could have been like a Bond villain name.
Absolutely.
If they just got lazy with one of those films.
But all that kind of started from like the Bart Simpson, you know, prank phone calling Moe's. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, you know, like who are you calling, Bart? And he's like, I'm looking for IP who? IP Freely? Has anybody seen IP Freely? You know, like, and everybody laughs. So
yeah.
And the Jerky Boys were big, so I think that's where it kind of comes from, all the prank phone calling and the fake names and all the pun names. So that was fun to see, like, I, you know, because we were doing that in high school, just like coming up with all those names. And then to see it in a film, we were like, oh, man, is this guy, like, dialed into us or what? So that was pretty cool. So so what do you think about some of the what was this movie trying to say with all this, Raj? What was the message?
Well, I think I touched about it a little bit. It's just, like, imagine being someone out of time in a different time.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, everything you knew has completely changed.
Right.
But Austin Powers is able to adapt, you know. He's just like, hey, you know, scene might have changed, but people are still people. There's still people out there looking for fun. Also, it's good to run a business with it. It's probably would be for the best if you run a company with competent people instead of incompetent people.
Yeah.
Not only are the employees incompetent failing to inform Dr. Evil, Dr. Evil is also very stupid. when he leaves Austin Powers to the death trap, and it's just like, okay, now close the blast doors. We're not going to look.
Yeah.
And
Seth brings it up. Seth Green. Oh, that's one thing I forgot to mention. I love Seth Green in this film because that's how I was. He's kind of like commenting on the film. And everything, and you know, kind of like a voice of our generation in a way in that film, because that's what we'd be like. I hate you, Dad. You know what I mean? You're trying to build a relationship with me now. Like, I hate you. Like, that was like our teen angst, you know, personified on this film for us. And then he's all like, why don't we just go to the you know, Austin Powers is there. Why don't we just go in the back, grab a gun, and shoot these guys in the face? Call
he's
it done.
He's a more effective villain than Dr. Evil is.
Yeah, exactly. So you just don't get it, Scott.
You don't get it. But all this shit. I guess there is also a talk about how evil corporations.
Yeah.
Like Virtue is able to make $9 billion. It really makes it beg the question, why would you need supervillains? They're just, these guys are just making money on their own.
Right, and doing evil things or whatnot. And they have a tour. That's hilarious.
Oh my God! The moment when they oh God, I had the guy written that tour guide, that guy.
Yeah,
there's something up with him. We make steel, petroleum products, and volatile chemicals. And he's like smiling evilly. He's just like, what? Okay, but also right after that, they go and steal the outfits.
Right.
And their disguises last them about 5 seconds. they instantly, like, they go into the bathroom, like, oh, and remember how it's like, what the two people they stole costume from? One is like a really really fat lady, and the other guy's like extremely tall.
Uh-huh.
And the costume fit them perfectly. but like as soon as they get in. The tour guy just goes like, yeah, we have a problem.
Yeah.
We're extremely ineffective.
I shagged a rotten. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, and then the alarms immediately go up.
Yep.
And then that leads into the greatest, no. The guy just won't get out of the way.
Yeah. The steamroller.
Steamroller just moves slowly towards him. Move out of the way. No.
No. And they're like 100 feet away, and it's just like that part cracked me up so much. That part, and oh my God, the part where he's backing up that little go kart thing that he's used, not go kart. I'm sorry, not go kart. The little golf cart thing.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, and he's like in the hallway, and he's like, yeah. He's going back and forth,
so awkward.
Trying to turn
this. This is what I say. The whole movie's so awkward.
That like, is so that, funny.
Like when they're about to launch the nuke and everything, you know, yeah. It's just like Dr. Evil has that futuristic suit on and everything.
He's falling off the chair.
And he falls off the chair and then immediately gets back up. And it's just like, it's just a quick, like, 10-second sequence. But it's just like.
Isn't there a guy making the noise? That
Oh, yeah. He's like announcing. He's counting down.
Yeah.
And I have to remember, like, you know, you see him announcing everything. And so when the place is about to self-destruct, he's staying behind and he's narrating everything. So that guy's probably dead.
Oh, yeah. So some things I thought of with the meaning and in the some themes,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously the cryogenics or whatnot, you know, freezing a person with the hopes of resurrection in the future. So I thought they were talking about that a lot. And then, I just found this out today that, cause I grew up thinking this but I guess it's an urban myth that Walt Disney was frozen.
Oh yeah.
But it's not true. He was cremated. He wasn't frozen. So it's just an urban myth.
It's one of those things where it's just like, hey, 8 spiders go into your mouth while you're sleeping every night. And it's just like, you know, you just kind of believe it because you're a kid.
Yeah, you're just always told over and over again that Walt Disney was frozen.
And then you grow up, and then it's just kind of like you're just led to believe that.
Yeah.
But no one ever begs to ask the question, is that real?
Yeah, right. So I found this out today. So a little tidbit that Walt Disney was not frozen.
Mm-hmm.
He was cremated, but there are people that have been frozen for mm-hmm. real. You know, some people, and some people are signed up to be frozen. The people who made PayPal
did it
are signed up to be frozen.
Am I remembering this correctly? Didn't Benjamin Franklin decide he wanted to like have his body like dipped in sap or something to preserve his body?
I never heard that.
I think it was something about that.
I could see that, but. I think it talks about, and this cryonetics is kind of like a pseudoscience. So it's on on the outskirts of science and kind of almost in the witchcraft type realm of today.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there are companies that kind of like do this for you. But one of them went out of business and they had to thaw the people and properly dispose of the bodies. So that would have sucked. That sucked if you were, you know, had all your eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
You know? And you have to wait until you're completely dead to be frozen. So, like, you're going to be old and frail, and, like, even if they resurrect you,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be, like, at the end of your life, like, in your body. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of, like, not a great idea. So you kind of want to be frozen in your prime, I would assume, like Austin Powers is or Demolition Man's.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you don't want to do it. So it doesn't make sense.
You bring that up, and now I have to think about the awkward scene where he has to go to the bathroom after he wakes up.
One of the funniest scenes ever.
What was it? What was the word?
I love how we leave early on that scene because he just keeps.
He just keeps going. And it's just like, okay, this is going to go on for a while.
But it's true.
Awkwardly ends.
But it's kind of the truth. Is like if someone's like frozen for 30 years, they're gonna have some built up,
mm-hmm.
you know, bladder problems. So, so I think it talks about that. I think it talks about capitalism,
yeah,
and branding and commercialism and actually like product placement in movies, which you know Adam Sandler is like notoriously mm-hmm. for doing.
Yeah.
But like it's the joke. Like the joke is that product placement is in the movie.
Wayne's World
does it. I mean, so I don't know if Adam Sandler got it from him or he got it from SNL.
Adam Sandler just wants money.
Yeah. Right. Well,
there's no joke in it.
Well, I mean, think about. Austin Powers, why wouldn't they want not wanting money? If
well, they do it in the form of a joke. Whenever you see it in it,
is it a joke? But it's in the movie, so it's still product placement, even if it's a joke.
I feel like
so the big boy obviously had to have paid money,
but with
to
Adam
get the big boy put in there,
like the big but it's at the very least like launching yourself up into a big boy. That's a funny gag, or in Wayne's World where he's going like. I would never stoop so low to
exactly.
doing all this stuff. And he's just like smiling. And it's a funny gag.
But
with them, they're just like, here's the product. With Adam Sandler, it's just like, here's the product. And
talk about a hole in one.
Yeah.
Subway sandwich.
Dunkin' Donuts. And I just.
So I thought he was talking about that, you know. I mean, but he uses it, which is funny because he needs, you know, mm-hmm. that's how you get money for films. That's actually one way to generate
yes,
film money. I'll get product placement.
Although, if you ever do product placement, I just wish you would do more stuff like Mike Myers did with these films. Just, like, make a joke out of
make
it.
Make a joke out of it, right. The sexual lifestyles changing from the after the AIDS epidemic, you know, like going from the 60s where everyone was free to, like, 90s and having that drastic, you know, course of in a person and kind of seeing that through their eyes. And they're like, wait, only sailors use condoms. Yeah. The filthy buggers, they go from port to port.
or just societal norms about, like, I guess, gender
roles?
Yeah.
Oh, because she doesn't want to be called baby anymore.
Or there's the old woman. There's Basil Exposition's mother, who happens to look like a man.
Oh.
And it's just like,
damn it, Austin, that's my mother.
You don't need to look beautiful. You don't need to look as pretty as you did back then. Am I saying, do you know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, there was a bit of a mannish look to.
Oh, because he punches her. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that was a callback to the when he punched the waitress in the first scene.
Oh, no. In the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but I'm going like, you know, it was acceptable because she kind of looked like a man. And that's how he's able to know.
Damn it, Austin. Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't look as feminine. And now when we get to the future, it's like, oh my God, this person doesn't look as feminine. I'm going to punch her.
Oh, okay.
It's just like gender norms have become a little different as well. It's just good like point. You don't need to look as beautiful as you did back then.
Exactly.
You don't need to spruce yourself up.
That's a good point. I see what you're saying, yeah. So it's definitely a fish out of water story.
Mm-hmm.
A 60s man living in today's world, which is kind of funny because they have a whole different...
Two 60s men, actually.
Yeah.
You know, there's Dr.
Yeah,
Evil.
Yeah, Dr. Evil is out of fish out of water, too.
It's sad with Austin Powers, but it's annoying with Dr. Evil because he's just like, why is no one telling me about this stuff?
Everyone's afraid. They don't want to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
So that opens up some... To you, you got something to talk about the making of this film?
I got two things.
Okay.
One, I'm just going to let you drink it. Don't want to rest the possibility of you spitting. Originally, for the role of Dr. Evil, it was Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey was supposed to be Dr. Evil.
I don't know. It kind of works with Mike Myers playing both characters. It's kind of fun.
It works. I can't see anyone else, but I could. When I think about how it was supposed to be Jim Carrey, I go like, I could see it. I could see Jim Carrey doing it
for sure.
But Mike Myers played Dr. Evil so well that
right.
It's just like I kind of don't want to see that.
Exactly. I kind of like the way we got it,
especially with the awkward. Especially with how they had to like shoot it. It's just like that one scene when Dr. Evil walks past them right by the launch site. It's just the back of his head. It's just a stunt man. Or the one scene when they're finally together. And it's just like, you know, you could just tell that it's like there's one point that's cut off and everything, just like separating the two. We're not so different, you and I. We're playing the same act.
Yeah.
And I'll say my other, you know, normally we stick it to two, but I'd like to do this one. So the actor who played, what was his name? Ajab?
Uh-huh.
Random Task.
Random Task?
Joe's son. He was a convicted murderer.
What?
Yeah, apparently he had killed people by this point.
For real?
Yes. I guess in 2011, he was sentenced to 7 years to life in prison in California for torture committed during 1990 unpleasantness.
Wow.
Following the beating death of his cellmate, Michael Thomas Graham, he was sentenced to an additional 27 years for voluntary manslaughter. He is now serving 34 years to life.
What?
Yeah, and it's just like, apparently he had probably killed someone around this point, so
wow.
They were that close to a murderer. And it's just like, oh God, that's really dark.
That is pretty dark.
Yeah.
That's awful. I didn't know about that. But what can you do, you know? I mean, some people are, you know.
Yeah, I was just like, what? That guy, I was like looking for the comments, and it's like they were what, right next to a serial killer, and I was like, what the hell?
Wow.
I just had to look it up.
Okay. Alrighty. So my behind the scenes of things are, well, obviously, this was a big thing. I mean, everybody kind of figured this out or knew this, but Dr. Evil mannerisms and whatnot, and was kind of based on Lorne Michaels from SNL. So that's kind of a nice
lower lip.
Yeah, and then just kind of like a, which is funny because, you know, that's what they do on that show. They lampoon people, famous actors. So, like, I think he's getting a little bit of his own medicine, which is funny. And then, you know, he found the voice by talking to his wife and saying, "Do I make you horny?" Mm-hmm. Right? And she's like, "Shut up, write that down." And it was gold mine. Mm-hmm. Like, so he just kind of like that came out of the ethos, and like it's like Dr. Evil quotes were like the quotes of the, for the next 10 years, everybody was quoting Dr. Evil.
I was quoting him right now. Exactly. It's not even a funny quote. "Gentlemen, welcome to my underground lair." I think it's just the way he delivers it.
Exactly. There's just something about it. It's got some good, you know. You ever see Kentucky Fried Movie?
I have to.
Yeah, you do. I won't say too
much
about it.
But I know about the Elmer Fudd guy.
Well, I'm talking more about the "You have my gratitude." No. It's they're making fun of the Bruce Lee movie.
Yeah, no, I think I know what you mean.
The Bruce Lee guy character also talks kind of like
Elmer Fudd,
right? Yeah. So that whole little scene is awesome.
Take him to Detroit.
Take him to Detroit.
No, not Detroit. Anything but that.
Nah, and then they cut the dude's head off. Nah, oh God! To be tortured.
What was that? Wasn't there an ad in that movie for it's like what happens when you experience sudden death?
Yes.
Symptoms of sudden death may be an ability to move, rigor mortis, and occasional drowsiness.
Dude, the Zucker brothers are running.
Zucker brothers and Abrams are wonderful
geniuses. And then the last thing is 30 to 40% of this film, Austin Powers, was improvised, which I didn't know that. And like, but watching it, thinking about it, I'm like, oh man, that totally.
What was improvised?
30 to 40% of the dialogue was improvised for this film, and a lot of it was like the whole Dr. Evil stuff. So,
I imagine this stuff might have been.
Yep.
Yeah.
That one for sure was improvised. Because, you know, it's just good. It's just good old-fashioned humor.
I would love it if the Frau Barbissina line was improvised, but that probably was written.
About the militant wing of...
Salvation Army.
Yeah.
that is a good gag. This is going to be one of those movies where it's like, I should have mentioned that. Because there's too much on my list to, like... like, right now, I'm looking at a quote. Right after, it's like the, "Ooh, does number two work for?"
Exactly.
And then it's like the guy goes, "Jesus Christ, boy, what did you eat?"
That's not a guy. That's, what's his name? That's he's Tom Arnold. That's not just a guy. That's Tom Arnold. He was married to Roseanne Barr.
I'm sorry. These names are kind of unfamiliar to me.
He was a comic. You don't know Tom Arnold?
I might recognize the name. I don't know if I quite recognize him.
That was like, whoa, Tom Arnold's in this film. That's crazy.
But even talking about the awkwardness, it's like when Austin first enters the bathroom, he's pouring too much powder on his hands, way too much, and then Tom Arnold barges in, and I don't think I ever noticed this the first time. When he barges in, he hits the blind guy. It's like the door. It just goes like, ow. Yeah.
The guy behind the bathroom guy.
But I love how Tom Arnold, after like looking into the bathroom, he's like, "What did you eat?" And he's like smiling. And he's just like, "Wow, okay. This guy's into it."
Yeah. "Hey, man, that sounds nasty. You didn't mean a courtesy flush over there." Bathroom humor just always works. Which is a lot of Saturday Night Live does a lot of bathroom humor, by the way. So
yeah.
That's totally up their alley.
Yeah, there's just so many things. It's like when the movie, like, when I started hearing Dr. Evil's theme as the movie started, I was like, okay, I gotta go get big popcorn. This is a movie I'm gonna have fun with.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I just had so much fun with it.
Once that theme hits, I'm like, you're in. You're just like,
even before then, it's just the Dr. Evil theme. The Dr. Evil theme is iconic to me. It's one of those themes where I always recognize it. And it's just like,
oh, right, right.
Yeah, it's just like when they did the General Motors commercial that started Dr. Evil and his henchmen, it's just like instantly you hear the Dr. Evil theme, and it's just like, yeah, that's Dr. Evil's theme. It's just so recognizable.
So, What? How could you make this film better, Roger? That side says it all right there.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking
that
about
breath.
The "Do I make you horny" scene on the plane.
Uh-huh.
That might be a little too awkward for me.
Okay.
But other than that,
but he's trying to chase her.
Yeah, he's trying to chase her, and you know, it's just like, you know, there's a certain like awkward.
And they need to have the stakes. Like, no, you're not getting in my pants. You're mm-hmm. not. There's nothing you can do. And then that's his challenge. You know what I mean? And that's his. Mm-hmm. That's the task. That's what he's. You know, that's one of his things.
I think my only criticism is I wish we just got a flat out Dr. Evil movie. We could still get it.
Really?
I mean, Mike Myers is down to still playing the character. He always randomly appears and keeps playing Dr. Evil, like in skits and
yeah.
and recently in the General Motors commercial.
There you go.
Scott, you just don't get it. You don't get it. And it's just like there's a little. One of the best things about the sequel is the introduction of Baby Me and Fat Bastard. Mini Me,
yeah.
Yeah, Mini Me and Fat Bastard.
And that's the thing. When I was watching this, I'm like, when does Mini Me show up? And where's Fat Bastard? And where's Heather Graham? Like, I wanted to see the other ones. And where's Foxy Cleopatra? Yeah. you know?
And they appear in the sequel.
Right.
That is one of the best things about the second movie. The third movie, not so much.
Yeah.
But I guess my criticisms are more towards the second movies. But
yeah.
This one, it's like hard to like.
I wish they wouldn't have killed off Elizabeth Hurley. I think she was awesome.
It could always be that she's somewhere out there, somewhere, and Mike and Austin Powers did above
her. Doesn't in this movie they say that her mom was Mrs. Kensington? So how was she a fembot in the second one?
They in the second film they go like Mrs. Kensington was a robot the whole time.
Oh, Mrs. Kensington too?
No. Vanessa.
Vanessa, yeah.
Yeah, Vanessa. He says to Basil, it's like. It turns out Vanessa was a fembot the whole time. It turns out Vanessa was a fembot. And he's like, yes, we knew the whole time, unfortunately. And you go like, what? What? How did... And there's a lot of hand-waving in the second one to just kind of have it. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, here's how he can have more partners.
Right, yeah, because he needs to like have a new love interest. So he just dismisses her.
He could have made it work. Made it work with the second film.
Yeah, and then she's like jealous because she's a natural jealous person. And mm-hmm. I don't know, like Elizabeth Hurley just set the standard for like these. I know she was kind of like making fun of the other Bond girls because that's what they call them, Bond mm-hmm. girls. But like, she was like probably like the most the best Bond girl, non Bond girl ever. So I was sad to see her go in the second one. I'm still hurting.
It still hurts that they just brought her back just to kill her.
Yeah.
It's still something where you go like, I kind of wish you didn't do that.
Yeah, and like I said, she didn't do much after that. She's on some show now, I think, that's doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It would be good if she had a longer career.
I
would have been a happy man.
I would not be upset if they decided they were making Austin Powers 4.
Oh, yeah.
If they announced that, I'd go like, okay, I'd be interested.
Yep, for sure.
Especially with like modern day spy movies, can you imagine Austin Powers like in a Casino Royale situation, or like Spectre? We gotta go back to your roots and not Spectre, Skyfall. It's like we have to go back to your roots, or something like that, or just like these really intense spy scenarios. And Austin Powers now has to be in the middle of all that.
Right. We'll see. So just to go back to Elizabeth Hurley, she's in a show called The Royals, I think. Runaways.
Okay.
The way I would make things better, and I don't know if that's even like a thing, but somehow, because I'm like, it's kind of stuck in the 90s, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So make it a little bit more timeless and not really like lock it down to an actual year or date or anything. I don't know.
I feel like there's enough material that kind of makes me go like, even that, like it's almost 30 years after the first Austin Powers movie, like
yeah.
to this day, like we still got like 5 more years or something till we reach that time. But it's like, even then it's kind of almost timeless in its message of like things change. The norms we had back in the 90s even will be different in 2027.
Right.
So it's just like it's kind of interesting to kind of go like, okay, what was time back like in the 90s? And that would be a good year to bring it back, Austin Powers.
In 2027?
Yeah.
That would like, be.
It opens with Dr. Evil going, "Gentlemen, I'm back. Welcome to my above the ground lair."
That's right. Nice.
They're like in the sky or something. Didn't Dr. Evil like take over a Starbucks in the second film? And that's where
I thought so. Yeah.
Even then, that's kind of like a joke.
Yep. Starbucks was coming on. Like getting big then.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing about branding and capitalism and commercialism and marketing and they're all over that. So one thing was the 90s and the 60s, like it didn't do a great job of, you know, like I couldn't, there's really no difference, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, it all kind of looks like it's from the 60s. It doesn't really, I mean, there's, you know, there's some, because, I mean, Austin's Powers airplane is still in the 60s. His dress is in the 60s.
Well, I mean, he probably kept that stuff.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, and then Dr. Evil dresses all his henchmen up in 60s type clothes. I mean, everything is kind of like still in the 60s. It's not a big thing for me. I'm just really reaching, honestly.
How could I
fix the film.
I mean, I guess Dr. Evil runs an organization and everyone needs to look prim and proper for him.
Right.
But it's just like,
it's still like all these like, you know, bland, like same color costumes and stuff like that. And okay. The fembots look like they're in the 60s. Like everything still looks like it's in the 60s. And it's not a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, if I could fix something, I would just make the 90s look more 90s and more 90s and less 60s. That's it. It's not even like,
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm not even like mad about it or nothing. It doesn't bother me, and it's not a cringe thing. That's all. Like that's really like all I can think I can think of.
Can you imagine if they bring that '60s vibe to the fourth Austin Powers movies? They still have a change.
Yeah, seriously.
They still look like they're from the '60s in 2027.
Yeah. All right. So Raj, anything we've missed? Anything else you want to bring up?
Apparently that cat really loved Mike Myers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like you could see that it's really snug in his arms and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
definitely a pro-cat movie, obviously.
Yes.
You need more pro-cat movies.
Also, really...
How many people name their cat Mr. Bigglesworth after this film? I bet you looked that.
You could look into it. I'm just thinking it's just like... You could really tell that he loved that cat considering how like the cat transformed. And he was just like still like, yeah, it's my cat. I'm just going to keep it.
look what happened to Mr. Bigglesworth.
Look what you did to Mr. Bigglesworth.
That was funny. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a henchman, a madman, like completely like in love with his cat.
Because that's what these movies never talk about. It's just like that guy got a cat. He probably loves the cat. he's petting it all the time, and that's where they go into it. It's like he has the bags of food ready for him. He's always talking about it. It's like when I get angry, Mr. Bigglesworth gets upset, and then when Mr. Bigglesworth gets upset, that's when people die.
We do that. I mean, we kind of use our pets to kind of like make the conversation. We do that at my house, like.
And the final quote from the film that I will talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get you, Austin Powers. It's freaking freezing in here, Mr. Bigglesworth.
That's so good.
And then the cuts to the cat, the puppet cat. The cat goes like, meow, meow. Nice.
Where's the one where at the end they're like, look at that spaceship. It looks like a big Johnson.
That's two.
Okay, gotcha. I was waiting for that to happen, too.
Yeah.
I was like, where's the fart? Okay.
You have to watch two. Two has some good moments.
I think two might be better than one.
I think there's definitely too many gross out moments for me in that film.
Oh, gotcha.
He has to get some nutty coffee.
Oh, is that the one where he eats asparagus?
I don't know.
Because he's got to keep peeing because the statue is peeing in the water and he's got to keep peeing.
I think that might be three.
Oh, boy. See, I was waiting for all that to happen. And none of that happened. What about when they're in the tent?
Tent is two.
Oh, man. See, I was like, where is all this stuff?
Yeah, that's the thing. Two brings in some stuff, but
yeah.
Free is definitely where it's like we're kind of running low on ideas.
Okay, so one thing I haven't mentioned, two things. I loved how the guy was called Exposition.
Yes.
Because he comes in and then the rising action starts. That's so funny.
That's what the person in charge always it does. Even Mission Impossible does it.
Yeah, this self-message was self-destruct. Yeah, he brings in the mission. Right. I love it how they called him Exposition. The deleted scene with Rob Lowe at the party for the guy that got run over at the steamroller, I think is like next level genius funny. If you ever seen that, I would probably, it's probably on YouTube. I would look it up. It's so funny.
And Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe's in it. Yeah, that's probably his cameo.
Well, and speaking of Rob Lowe, he later came back for the sequel playing young number two.
Right, exactly. When they go back into the 60s in part two. I loved all the cameos with Will Ferrell and Carrie Fisher. I said that. But did you know that the guy who got flattened by the steamroller, and that's his credit, that's Michael McDonald?
Michael McDonald.
From Mad TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You ever see the things? It's like, he's like the guy from Mad TV. I caught it on this rewatch here. I'm like, that's the guy from Mad TV.
I mean, Val Kilmer got his acting start in Top Secret.
Oh, I love Top Secret.
Top Secret is really good.
It's dude, it's a and then Michael McDonald was the bad guy in Spy, the Spy Hard with Sandra Bullock and
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy, he was the bad guy for that. I think it's called Spy Hard or Spy something.
I think it might just be Spies.
Yeah. So he was in that, but dude, that guy makes me laugh. On Mad TV, if you ever get a chance. To if you ever can see that stuff, because he was like in every skit, and he doesn't get a lot of credit or a lot of people don't a lot of people didn't really talk too much about Mad TV, the TV show. Mad TV.
Oh yeah.
So and there was a lot of funny stuff going on, and they were going up against SNL, you know. So I appreciate it, his stuff, his humor. He plays like this kid and he's like, you know,
I get you.
You know, super funny.
I would also be remiss not talking about one of my last favorite scene. There's so many scenes, but the evil laughter scene where they all start laughing about their evil plan.
Right.
And it, you know, normally in a spy film, the villains would laugh about their evil plan, and it would cut right when the musical cue hits the high. You go like, ah, ha, 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 and then cut. This does not have the cut moment, and then everyone just keeps laughing awkwardly.
For sure.
To the point where it's just like they're all comfortable after they're done laughing. They're all just standing there.
That's good stuff, man. That's just funny stuff. Just fun, good old-fashioned humor. Good old, you know, nothing too deep, but still touching on a little bit of deep, but nothing crazy. So, Roger, if you like this film, Austin Powers, what films do you recommend other people check out?
James Bond films.
Sure.
Airplane.
Yep.
Top Secret.
Yep.
That's kind of just what's on my mind at this moment.
Okay.
I don't really have too many more recommendations.
All right.
I guess the second movie is also pretty good. I enjoy that, but I haven't seen Goldmember in a while, so I can't comment on that. Yeah, I think that's about what I got for that.
Okay. Just going to add a couple and probably retouch on a few that I've already talked about. Wayne's World. All right.
Yes.
Let's see. So I Married an Axe Murderer. Have you seen that?
No, I don't think I have.
That's like one of his first films. It's almost like a little serious. Not serious, but it's probably his most, Mike Myers' most like serious film. But it's still hilarious, and he's still like a bunch of characters.
What about Inglourious Basterds?
Oh yeah, well that wasn't like his movie though. Like he was just a cameo as that one as the general.
Was that super weird? Just seeing him just be in a serious role, not really. It's almost his presence makes his role funny, just because it's just Michael Myers here talking. Mike Myers here just giving Michael Fassbender orders on how to meet up with the bastards.
What is he saying? He's like,
he says it in a British voice. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how you're going to achieve this. We need a German. We need an Englishman who speaks German to help the black bastards take down these important...
What should we drink to? Down with Hitler. And he's like, go over to the Globe and pour us a scotch. Yes. Yeah, that was great. Oh, he was also in Queen. He was in the movie Queen. He was like their manager guy.
Oh, yeah. The Bohemian Queen, Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody, right. Yeah. So that was pretty cool to see him in that. Because I haven't, yeah, I mean, other than Shrek, I don't know after, you know, what else he did.
He did The Love Guru.
Ugh.
And then he did The Cat in the Hat.
Ugh. Oh, look. Austin Powers 4 announced, rumored,
It's rumored. He would love to do Austin Powers 4.
Right.
But I don't think it's set in stone.
So Wayne's World. Demolition Man, I touched on that.
Yes.
If you're into the Hulk cryogenically being frozen and coming back and kicking some butt. All the Austin Power movies. Check out Saturday Night Live from 89 to 95. That was the years that he was on the cast.
Mm-hmm.
The Pentaveret, I've been watching. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Check that out. And Encino Man, if you're into the whole, once again, fish out of water, somebody from...
And also, since you mentioned cryogenically frozen, I'll just throw it in. Aliens.
Aliens, yeah. Oh, and if you want more Elizabeth Hurley, she was in the Brendan Fraser movie. Starts with a B. Bedazzled?
Yeah. Bewitched.
No, not Bewitched.
Brendan Fraser movie.
Brendan Fraser... And
bedeviled?
Bedeviled?
Elizabeth
Hurley. Yeah, watch her other film that she's kind of known for. And then Any Robot
Chicken. Bedazzled.
Bedazzled. Yeah, Bedazzled. And then obviously Robot Chicken with Seth Green and all that.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
All right, so what are you watching now?
I started watching the Lakers show.
Cool.
I'm halfway done with the final season of Ozark. We were talking about Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
And I watched maybe his best role.
The Saint?
No, I watched Tombstone.
Oh, okay.
As Doc Holliday.
That was okay.
He's really good. It's Doc Holliday.
Yeah, he's awesome.
The rest of the movie is a guy like highs and lows, but
yeah.
Every scene he's on, he's just like so good. As
I'll be your Huckleberry.
I have two guns, one for each of you. if I could just make a special recommendation, I started playing the Guardians of the Galaxy video game.
Oh,
and
video game.
Yes, gameplay is good.
Okay,
but it's very much the story. And the character interactions that, like, really... And even the look of the game. It really just, like, sucks you in. It's, like, a surprising amount of lore.
Yeah.
It's not attached to the movie, but it does have feature, like... And I don't think it's also attached to the comics. It's its own, like, universe. But just, like, it's really interesting to, like, listen about all these characters' backstories and everything. And
very cool.
Really having a fun time with that one.
Okay. Cool.
And I think that should... about what I've been watching
okay.
so far.
Okay, so I actually started watching The Pentaveret.
Yes.
And if Mike Myers is up to his same old, you know,
weird awkward humor.
Yeah, awkward humor. He has this one scene. Have you seen it?
I know about one very specific cameo.
Well, I don't know about that, but like there's this one scene in episode 2 mm-hmm. that I'm like, this is super funny.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, Mike Myers is doing. He's still doing it. So I can't wait. I'm watching the rest of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching Black Sails. I watched Metallica, Some Kind of Monster, the 2003 documentary about their, like, kind of a low period they had.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's kind of like a right turn from everything, but, like, I don't know. Like, I grew up watching Metallica. I've never seen that documentary, so it was cool to watch that. And then they're searching for a bass player and everything, and they're just not having a good go. And
right.
So it was kind of cool because Metallica just kind of announced that James Hetfield said that he's kind of done playing. He's too old. He says he can't keep up with everything, which, you know, in lieu of the whole Foo Fighters drummer dying from what they're saying now could have been exhaustion. I mean, and he was in his 50s. I mean, I can see that. Being in a band, like, sometimes you love playing, but, man, sometimes it's, you know, it's a strain on your body and your mind, and your hearing and your physical toll that you take. So I don't know. It was just good insight to see a band, a popular band, struggle, like, you know, with the creative process and changing and losing members and still trying to maintain their success. And it was kind of cool. I appreciate that mm-hmm. that kind of insight into their world. Because, you know, they're just being themselves, and it's kind of weird. They're real people.
Right.
And you just build them up to be these, like, gods on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Barry Season 3 is still very much on my watch list as those episodes come out. I've been watching The Last Kingdom. I'm just into, like, these, I don't know, I'm getting into, like, these old, like pirates and mm-hmm. barbarians and Vikings. Like, I don't know, for some reason, I'm back into that, all that stuff. I love that kind of stuff. I should check out that Northman, I guess, or whatnot.
Oh, the Northman is really good. It's not a full-on action film.
Yeah.
It's very much in the style of Hamlet.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind.
That's fine.
It does have some really good action in it.
Sounds great. And then Formula Drive to Survive. So, and I talked about Community too, right? I'm watching. And it's so Netflix stuff, really.
Mm-hmm.
So started watching that. Okay. Anyways.
Do you want me to do the teaser?
Yeah.
It's kind of appropriate that we're doing this film since one of its many themes is about second chances.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Chew on that, listeners out there. And thank you for listening to our episode here on Austin Powers. It was a lot of fun to
go
back.
Yeah, baby.
There it is. Still very much into the whole... you know, he's pop culture, like, yes. instantly pop culture, here to stay.
He's an icon. He's a comedy icon.
Very well said.
Dr. Evil, though, just, like, it's where my heart's at. just constantly getting annoyed by his company's incompetence. It's right up my alley in terms of humor.
Absolutely. All right, Roger. Till next week.
Yep. Take care, everyone.
Hey, everybody. We'll see you out there. Have a good time.
Have a good one.
Be careful.
Bye.
Bye.
Keep up the good work and prevent accidents. This shift is concluded.